I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the ways we can better launch the very young into life. We're going to talk about early childhood development. We're going to talk about the ways that we can nurture, challenge, and teach children even before they get to school. My guests will be Dr. Ted Maple of the Day Nursery Association and Dr. Thomas Locke of the Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. And you, please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about early childhood development. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Dr. Ted Maple, the Day Nursery Association. Ted, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. And Dr. Thomas Locke of the Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's talk. Let's start, set the table here. I guess that's appropriate for holiday and Thanksgiving imagery. Why is early childhood development as important as it is? I'll start with you, Ted, but I'm going to let Tom have a whack at that one, too.
Sure, thank you. Well, what we know is we have a great opportunity and obligation for young children. 85% of the brain is developed in the first 3 years of life. There are about 700 neural connections per second. And so as parents, as caregivers, as teachers of young children, it's an exciting opportunity for us to really maximize learning and development for young children, and an opportunity for us as a community to think about ways in which we can support parents and educators in that.
Tom.
I personally deal largely with children with disabilities, and there's increasing evidence that the earlier that we can provide supports those children need, the farther they go, the less support they need later. So that it's just a great opportunity.
So early intervention, in effect, is the key there.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me ask. Ted used the expression, he said, it's a marvelous opportunity. And I guess my question would be, in terms of how Indiana is doing, how effectively have we taken advantage of that opportunity? And I ask that because, it's been a persistent theme in our public discussion ever since, the late Governor Frank O'Bannon made it one of the centerpieces of his State of the State address 15 years ago. But it's the fact that it keeps coming back as a subject for discussion suggests that we still have some work to do. I'll start with Ted on that one.
Sure. Well, you're right. It's been encouraging to hear the discussion out of the State House, out of the mayor's office, out of organizations like United Way, who are relatively new to the conversation about early childhood education. And there's lots of businesses and business leaders who are very engaged in making this a great place to work and live for families, and early childhood education is a key to that. Most of the discussion has been about pre-K. Mm-hmm. We're one of I think 10 states in the U.S. that does not have a public pre-K program, and that's important, and I support that. But what often gets
clarify,
lost.
Clarify, you support the idea of a public pre-K program,
absolutely.
Not support the fact that we're one of the 10.
Oh, no. Thank you.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you for that clarification. So what often doesn't get talked about, though, are very, very young children, infants and toddlers, and the great need we have. You know, we have so many mothers and fathers that need great care for their kids when they're working. In fact, in Indiana, we have 69% of mothers with infants are in the labor force. Mm-hmm. That means they need really good childcare, and the fact is there's not enough high quality childcare out there to support them. And given the fact that these kids, their brains and bodies are developing at a rapid rate, they need great care and supervision and stimulation. We need to make sure we can do the best we can for them.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Tom, we said earlier that particularly with the children you work with who have disabilities, that intervention, early intervention is a key. What's the cost if we don't?
I don't mean in human terms.
I'm not talking
that,
about dollars.
The more that children are unable to be included with their peers and in their community, the more difficulty they have later becoming independent. And we see kids that have problems, behavior difficulties and problems making friends. One of my teachers used to say that if you could ask one mental health question of a child about a child, and you had to only pick one, the question was, can your child make friends? So these things are very important.
So it creates barriers, in effect, for the child if we don't get that intervention. Walls them off from human contact to some degree.
Yeah, they don't get included in the regular community activities we all want our children to participate in, whether it's recreational activities, getting invited to birthday parties.
So, and Ted, in terms of, we mentioned the fact that we don't have, a public pre-K program here, and that somewhere between two-thirds and three-quarters of the mothers in Indiana are part of the workforce and need some sort of system to help provide child care and meaningful child care for the children. What is the cost to us, again, not in dollars and cents, but in human terms, to that the children's development that we don't provide that?
Well, there is a pretty substantial financial cost, because if we don't make sure that children are successful in the early years, then we're going to pay for it down the road.
How so?
When children don't have great early childhood experiences, either in the home or in a child care center or in a preschool program, then and they're facing a risk factor like poverty, then they're likely to show up for school about a year to a year and a half behind, and then they often never catch up. And so we're then spending our resources on remediation. We are spending our resources on special education. We are spending our resources even further down the road on adults that are not self-sufficient and maybe engage in criminal activity. So there's a financial cost publicly, obviously a personal cost to that child. And if we're able to mitigate that with high-quality early childhood education, birth to five, then we can start to level the playing field, particularly for children in low-income families.
Where does the opposition come from to creating a meaningful early approach to early childhood development?
Oh, I don't know that there's opposition to early childhood development, early care and education.
Well, is it more who provides it then? Because one of the arguments you will hear is, you know, we didn't need daycare centers when I was a kid. You know, we didn't need this, that, or the other. And I'm doing just fine. So,
But the reality today is that most families either have, if it's a single parent family, that parent's working. If it's a two-parent family, most of those families have both families working, both parents working, excuse me. So children are going to be somewhere. Should we make sure that they're in a great place? And the fact is, we don't ensure that. You know, I know that probably a lot of your listeners have been reading the articles in the Indianapolis Star lately about the concern for low-quality child care standards in Indiana. And the opposition to trying to create a level playing field among all providers and trying to make some common sense changes to laws and regulation. So there is opposition to that.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, let's walk through. We know now, we've sort of established in the discussion, that early childhood development is important, probably a good idea. So how do we go about it? I mean, what ways should we structure a child's development so that, you know, he or she can maximize potential? I'll start with you, Tom.
Human interaction is central, that that a lot of parents, preschool teachers, other children, they establish, you know, interaction, talk about what they're doing, talk about what they're not doing. Then this constant back and forth is central to proper cognitive language development.
So it is literally something as simple as start talking with your child immediately. Does it matter if you do the, you know, the baby talk, or should it be talking as if we're sitting here talking?
Both can be helpful. I mean, that there are a number of techniques that people use. There's, you know, expanding what your child does so that when your child, very small child, says, "Look, ball," and the parent comes back and, "Look, it's a red ball," and just adding bit by bit. There's running commentary on what the parent is doing. That teachers do that too. Reading books.
Ted, in terms of beginning to structure and help your child, or help a child, it doesn't have to be your child, begin developing her or his potential, what are the best ways to start?
Right. You know, I think Tom hit it on the head. It's all about relationships and interactions between that adult, whether it be the parent or primary caregiver or the teacher. I'd like to, you know, point out a study that was done some time ago that looked at the vocabulary development in the first few years of life and found some interesting data on the number of words that children hear depending on the kind of family they're in. So children in a professional family on average heard approximately 11 million words per year. Children in a working class family heard approximately 6 million. And children in families in poverty heard even less, about 3 million words per year. And just the breadth and depth of language that children hear can impact them. And so for us as a community, we need to be thinking about how we can make sure that we're giving all families, all children, the opportunities and guidance on how to provide that that support, those interactions, those basic building blocks in the youngest years.
Are there certain specific kinds of interactions that you ought to, you know, try to have with your child or a child who's in your care, Ted?
Well, in our day nursery centers, what we talk about is, with our teachers and with our parents, is how we can engage in back and forth interactions with children. So when we talk to young children, We don't just ask them closed-ended questions that can end in a yes or no, but questions that can expand their vocabulary, more open-ended questions. So instead of what color is that block that you're playing with, tell me about what you're building. Tell me about what you're thinking about, what you're pretending, what you're imagining as you build that block tower.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Ted Maple of the Day Nursery Association and Dr. Thomas Locke of Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about early childhood development. My guests are Dr. Ted Maple of Day Nursery Association and Dr. Thomas Locke of the Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. Angie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to comment about the difference that United Way of Central Indiana is making in the local area and actually for me personally. My three daughters are now 8, 5, and 3 years old, and they have attended Little Dove Daycare at East 10th United Methodist Church since we moved here in 2009, and during that time, the daycare has been on the Paths to Quality program through United Way of Central Indiana, and we have seen such amazing changes to things like the playgrounds that the kids play on. There are now sinks in the classrooms. There are appropriate potties for all of the kids and that sort of thing. And so I just really wanted to comment that United Way is making a big difference and that this Paths to Quality program is really excellent.
Thank you very much for the call, Angie, and I'm glad things are going well. Well, we've actually gotten a Facebook question that dovetails on Angie's comment and her story, and it says, what is it going to take to get effective health and safety standards in Indiana daycare ministries? Ted, I'll throw that one to you.
Well,
that seems to be in your wheelhouse.
Thank you. Well, and I will echo Angie's comments about United Way and the state's Past Equality program. They're really, United Way has been a great supporter, particularly of helping faith-based child care ministries improve their quality dramatically. And then Past Equality is a great tool for parents. For parents who aren't familiar with it, it's a four-level system, four being the highest. And it's an opportunity for parents to select child care to, again, level the playing field based on those levels. And we would say that any parent should at least find a level one Past Equality program, which is equivalent to licensure, which ensures that, as your question stated, that we have basic health and safety standards.
What are the standards for differentiating between 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Well, level 1 is equivalent with basic health and safety. In level 2, there are standards in place that ensure that there is a learning environment for children. So for a 3-year-old, you wouldn't expect them to go into a classroom and sit down at desks all day, would you? So there's age-appropriate equipment, tools, learning materials for those kids. In level 3, there's a curriculum that helps prepare that child for school. And level 4 is the highest, and that's national accreditation. All of our day nurseries are at level 4. But to the point about health and safety standards, that is really critical. And again, what some of the STAR articles were covering was the fact that we don't ensure that basic health and safety standards are in place for all children in child care, even those that are publicly supported. And the most important are standards like maximizing the number of children you can put in a classroom or a building, to ensuring that there's enough adults present to care for children. Those adults are well-trained and educated. So those really have to be the first priority.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Christy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am curious, it's certainly a challenge to find quality child care and early childhood education, but often the cost is very difficult and challenging, even for families that have two working parents. I know a three or four, level three or four child care can cost up to $300 a week plus, you know, $12,000 a year, up to that for a family that's working. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about those challenges.
Thank you very much for the call and the question, Christy. Well, Ted, you seem to be popular. They're sending all of the questions your way.
She's absolutely right. As a matter of fact, it's extremely expensive. It's on par with college tuition now. So the average annual fees for an infant in a child care center in Indiana is over $8,000 per year, which is right around the average for the U.S. And coincidentally, that's about the same as the annual average tuition for a four-year college in Indiana. And for a single mother, an Indiana single mother is spending 41% of her income on child care. 41%. How can we expect that family to be successful if that is the case? Of course, it's much more affordable for two incomes, but still hard to do. So, you know, I think the answer is that we need to make sure that we have some way to subsidize to a greater degree this really important service to young children and families, just the way that we do school. We subsidize K-12 education, spend very little on birth to five, even though birth to five is where we can make the most difference. And we do subsidize to some degree child care through child care vouchers, but there's not enough of them. They don't cover the cost enough. They're limited to families making 127% of poverty, which is pretty low. And so we've got to figure out a solution to this, and it's got to be soon, because we're really putting kids and families at risk both financially and developmentally.
Tom, I would think everything that Ted has just said here is exacerbated if you're talking about a child with special needs, too. If it's not tended to early on, it the problem just keeps getting worse and worse. The challenge does.
It certainly is, and I think one of the reasons why autism is now such a big concern is that the current early intervention general model is a therapist contact once a week, mm-hmm. For a relatively brief time, and having and depending on the family to provide the bulk of the intervention. This is, if you have intensive special needs where you need, 20 to 40 hours of intervention, this just, isn't even a drop in the bucket. It's, and like we were talking before, that human interaction is core to this, so that, and you want good quality mm-hmm. human interaction. So it's hard to think of more less expensive ways to do it.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ted, we like to pride ourselves in this country on the fact that we are a classless society, the myth. But in some ways, at least what I hear, is if you can't afford to some degree to pay to get your kid, the kind of instruction, interaction, whatever term we want to, intervention, whatever term we want to use early on, you are severely limiting that child's options going through life, which means that we're sort of stratifying levels of achievement that might have nothing to do with the child's potential. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it absolutely is. You know, I think to my point earlier, what we know is that if we don't do something to mitigate the impact of poverty in the early years, there are exceptions, but many of these children are not going to have a chance. You know, I used to be a kindergarten teacher, and it was pretty easy to tell which kids had good early childhood education on almost from day one. And the reality is, to the caller's point, if you don't have significant resources at your disposal, and there aren't subsidies to help you with those with that cost, then you may be out of luck. And there's a lot of child care options out there, but too many of them are low quality, and parents are forced into a situation where they have to put their child somewhere where they work, or they lose their job, and then the problem gets worse. We shouldn't be putting parents in that situation. We should make sure that every child care is at least healthy and safe, that it's helping to educate children while they're there, and C, that it's affordable. Children shouldn't be set back by their circumstances in this way.
How do we do that? I mean, if there's a need out there, okay, let's take where we are right now as the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go about getting to that point where we've got an affordable child care system that stimulates the children who are in it in ways that are appropriate, I guess I should qualify there, so that we're launching them on the path to success? What changes would we start with?
Well, I think the first thing, and this is a point that United Way advocates for very strongly, is to ensure that what public dollars we do spend are going to support and subsidize good care and education. And the fact is, we're not doing that now. And we pride ourselves on many things in this state. One of them is that if we're spending public dollars on something, we're spending it well. We don't in this case. In fact, we spend almost $30 million a year in child development vouchers for child care on low-quality child care, on unhealthy and unsafe child care. We should attach strings to child care vouchers to make sure they only go to high-quality care. So parents know, okay, I've got this voucher. I can take it to a child care program, but I can only take it to a high-quality one. And it'll help me afford a high-quality program, and it'll help my child I'll have peace of mind when I'm at work, and my child will be learning while I'm at work. And so I would start, assuming we don't have any money, new money, I would start with spending the money we have now well.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Tom, I'm going to ask you to play doctor here a little bit and help me out. And I think what's prompting me is that there are other things other than just the basic. So far we've sort of talked here as if it's almost like a blank slate when you're starting with a child, but there can be other circumstances other than just the interaction and all of that that play a role in terms of this. I'm thinking one of my own children had a series of ear infections, nasty ear infections for about 2 years, and that slowed, you know, some speech development along the way. Fortunately, you know, we caught it. We were able to do some intervention and everything was fine and progressed as it should. But what are some of the other signs that parents should look at and think, okay, maybe my child does need some help or needs something to, you know, need some sort of intervention here?
Certainly, keeping up with your primary care is important. that more and more physicians are getting involved in screening and discussions with families about their children's development, filling out developmental questionnaires, that seeing if you're, like I talked about making friends before, if your child's having difficulties making friends when they're a little bit bigger, if you're having frustrations with their behavior, if they're acting out, but trying to find someone who can help you sort out what their frustrations are.
Is a good start there your pediatrician, or are there other places you should go?
Your pediatrician, your family doc, your nurse practitioner are all good sources. They're the commonest contact that everybody has who doesn't, given that you, and if you're in an educational situation, of course, your teacher, but the commonest route into, for people with children with special needs is through in this age group is through the healthcare system.
We are talking about early childhood development. We've gotten a comment from a listener named Brenda via Facebook, and if you want to connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Brenda says, I heard one of your guests mention a study about the vocabulary development in children from different household income levels. I read that study, Meaningful Differences. I feel it should be required reading for all general education majors, as well as used in discussion with General Assembly members to fund preschool education across the state. Brenda, if it's okay, I'm going to actually morph a question out of your comment here and say, do we do enough also? I mean, we've got established curricula for preparing teachers at every other level. Do we do enough do we treat pre-K education with the same degree of attention? And have we created curricula that are specific to those children's needs? Ted?
Well, yes and no. I mean, one of the things to keep in mind is that preschool teachers are not, unfortunately, not as valued as K through 12 teachers. And there are different ways to express value, of course. I'm sure
most of them probably would prefer money.
Yes, that's what I was referring to. I'm sure most of your listeners express their value in other ways to their child care providers or preschool teachers. But, in many cases, preschool teachers are barely making a livable wage, if that. And it's hard to expect the best out of people or in the best people when we don't show that kind of value. And despite that, we see some amazing professionals in Indianapolis, in this state, that teach and care for children every day. Not all of them are day nursery, but most of them are. Mm-hmm. But we have some great supports to make sure that those teachers have what they need in order to provide the best instruction and curriculum for kids. The state of Indiana through FSSA and Indiana Association for the Education of Young Children provide scholarship for teachers to receive certification, their associate's degree, even their bachelor's degree in early childhood development, understanding how difficult and expensive it is for people making so little to afford education. So, I think there's good things going on in that regard.
We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Ted Maple of the Day Nursery Association, Dr. Thomas Locke of the Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits, and my guests are Dr. Ted Maple, the Day Nursery Association, and Dr. Thomas Locke of the Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. Just beforehand, I asked you a question, spinning off of Brenda's comment on Facebook about, you know, how well we prepare. I realize this is somewhat a chicken and egg question, mm-hmm. but you mentioned the fact that we don't give preschool teachers the respect that they deserve.
Yes.
Is that in part because we don't have established curricula for them? We don't say that this is that, you know, would that come as part of it, the idea that we are going to say that this is going to become a profession rather than a job?
Oh, that's a really great point. You know, I think that though it has many aspects of a profession, it's not there yet, and it's not viewed, or early child education, that workforce is not yet viewed as a profession, and it's not just pay. And I think it comes from the fact that for the longest time, early child education was viewed as kind of a custodial relationship between...
Well, even the name child care,
yes,
rather than
day nursery.
Yeah, or whatever. Yes. There's not a suggestion that there's learning going on there necessarily as part of that.
Yes, and that's, you know, why it was established. It roots as its roots in Mother's Day Out, and when women started to go in the labor force several decades ago. But what we know is that what the research has shown us is that we should be doing a lot more in those early years, and we are, and viewing this more as an educational endeavor than just babysitting. And I think we've got to get over that hump of that assumption.
I got a question that just randomly occurred. Does it make any? Are there any studies? And I can ask. I'll start with Tom, but Ted, if you've got the answer, feel free to jump in. Are there any studies that show that a child's development is affected by having siblings or not, or being an only child? I realize I'm probably walking right out into a minefield.
There are studies that are pretty old now and can be sort of stereotypical. Kids in any birth order can be very successful. I can't recall off the top of my head.
If it mattered had siblings. So we focus most of the attention on birth order and not so much whether it matters whether they're a group of you or only one of you.
Yeah, I don't know. Ted,
do you know?
Not of a study specifically on this. That's not what most of my attention has been on. But, you know, practically speaking, if what we're talking about is as being one of the most important aspects of early child development, it's more difficult for parents, especially single parents, to give the kind of attention to multiple children than one. I know I have three children, and it's hard for me to find a good day that I feel like I've done a good job.
Well, and at a certain point, they begin to, you know, they create their own little world. I know with my children that's the case. We are talking about early childhood development here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Roderick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Here's my question to my guests. One of the guests indicated that if we use the money we have now, we should just use all the public money we have in terms of for those daycare centers that are at least a level 4 or higher. If you recall, during the Bowman administration, and then Ronald Reagan came in, they began using the daycare centers and child care as a way of, A, getting parents out of poverty or off the welfare roll, and B, as an economic engine in terms of the community, whether it be African-Americans or whether it be Hispanic community, the way as a driver of business. My concern, if you use that policy, how do you ensure that, A, you don't defeat those policies, B, you cut off the ability of new providers to enter the market, and C, you don't stratify so that what happens, those daycare providers who have access to capital, which happens in many small communities don't have, become the providers and everybody else get locked out.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Roderick. Ted.
Thank you. I wasn't suggesting that all public dollars go to level four child care providers. I think what I was suggesting, sorry I wasn't clear, was that we should ensure that any public dollars that we're spending on child care is going to, at the very least, a healthy and safe child care, which would be equivalent with level one. Of course, we can aspire to having every child care reach level two, three, and four, or higher, and we hope we get there someday, but we have to figure out how to make it affordable for everyone at the same time. But I don't think it's too much to ask that we ensure that that there's enough care, there's enough adults to watch children, to make sure they're safe, that the buildings are clean, that caregivers, teachers can get kids out of a building if there's a fire, that we're not putting 50 children in a little house and calling it child care and then paying for it on our public dollar. So I think that's my only comment about first steps, is that we ensure that if we're spending public dollars, that we're not putting it in unsafe places.
Well, and I guess my question following up on that, in terms of this standard of determining one, two, three, or four, how often is that reevaluated? How often do they go, you know, do inspectors come and make sure that you're still a four or a three or a two, or even if you've promised to deliver these services, whether in fact you're doing them? What's the accountability or assessment?
Every year. They're visited annually. And
who does the inspection?
It's done through the Family and Social Services Administration, the Bureau of Child Care. They have raters that come out and make that determination.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener, and if you want to connect with us via Facebook, you can do so at WFYI. Says, I know many immigrant children who are not eligible for Medicaid and whose parents cannot afford regular visits with a primary care physician. How can mothers who can't even go to English class without child care identify developmental issues in young children? Governor Pence refuses to expand Medicaid to include them. I'll throw that one Tom's way. Is the fact that we have, what I think even the governor would acknowledge, 300,000 people who are outside of having some sort of health insurance right now, a problem for us?
It's definitely a problem,
I understated that.
And the care that the rest of us get is degraded by the fact that that when people who are uninsured come for care, that the resources for that have to come out of somewhere, and since it's not coming from the state, it's coming from people who pay for health insurance. There are some clinics in town. I'm relatively new to the state. I can't list them off the top of my head that do care for people who are uninsured. I think there are a lot of uninsured care goes on. They're now what was Wishard, what's now Eskenazi. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely a big problem my beliefs about everybody needs health care. Anybody that we hear on the news about these young people that don't need insurance. Mm-hmm. Well, they're one step off the curb from needing insurance. So, we all need insurance. We've had a problem in our family with somebody who's in the age group. They're over 26, but they haven't got. But they've been going to school. They haven't got their first job.
Yeah.
And went running and had a foot injury and needed an MRI, and that's costing more than a year of insurance if she could get it.
Yeah. So, Ted, in terms of the listener's question, too, I mean, it's one of those ramifications. Is the whole healthcare debate, should early childhood development be part of that discussion, too? I mean, do we need to look at this problem more holistically?
Of course. So healthcare is not my area of expertise, but there's more to early childhood education than just intellectual development, obviously. And we should all make sure that we're paying attention to the health needs of young children. And there are great opportunities out there. You know, one very interesting program that's taken root here in Indianapolis, that's based on a national model, is called Nurse Family Partnership. Mm-hmm. And it's actually run by Goodwill. And what they do is they pair nurses with first-time moms, and they start working with moms prenatally until the baby is born, until the baby turns two, actually. And that nurse visits that mom at least every other week and provides the kind of support and care to ensure that baby and that mother together in tandem get the best start that they can. And what's most compelling about this is it's based on 30 years of research that have very, very similar outcomes that we were talking about pre-K, but you start even earlier with better birth outcomes, better health outcomes for very young children. And so I think it would behoove us to invest in more programs like this. The Nurse Family Partnerships serves about 470 families now, but there are a lot more that need a service like this.
Gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Says, how do we build public will for more early childhood developments or move just beyond our own children? How do we get to thinking about this as a community challenge? Ted, I'll let you start with that one.
Well, I think in a way the caller answered her own question, that we've got to start by thinking about all children as our children. That my six-year-old's future depends on the success of his six-year-old peers, and if we don't think about that in those terms, then and are only focused, it's easy for me to say, but as a parent, we tend to be focused on our own kids, and we should be. As a community, we need to be focused on all kids, understanding that we'll be better as a community and our own kids will be better. So I think the caller was right that we need to shift public will in that direction. Parents are our best advocates. Parents are the best advocates for their own children, and can and should be advocates for all children.
Where does the pushback come, though, on that? I mean, there is a sense that to some degree, at least one of the themes I've heard when I've talked about this issue, and I'm reported on it for many, many years, is that people don't want to be told what to do with their own children. They're afraid that at some level that there will be a level of direction that they're just not comfortable with. How do you address that concern, Ted?
I think talking about
even the idea of saying community is a buzz.
Yeah,
for some
yeah.
people, it's a, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s, we were talking about full-day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. There was even resistance to that because there was this concern that, you know, we were starting to institutionalize or take over the role of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
As a public, and people seem to have gotten over that pretty quickly, and I think in time we'll move in that direction. But I think that just understanding the reality of the fact that while most parents would love to have at least one parent home with that child all day, and kind of your milk and cookies mm-hmm. environment. That is just not the reality of society today. If 7 out of 10 babies are in childcare, then we have to think about what we can do to support those babies and those parents the best we can. They have to work, they have to be in childcare. So let's solve this problem and take it on.
We have gotten a tweet from Kirsten that's somewhat on this point. It says, I love the Day Nursery Lily Center. Amazing, dedicated, and wonderfully caring. That's a shout-out for you, Ted.
Thank you.
Also says, also, regarding women in the workforce, they've been there for more than a few decades, and daycare helps men just as much. So.
Good point.
Yeah, a fair point. So,
but I don't
go
think,
ahead, Tom.
I don't think Ted is proposing mandatory preschool. He's proposing right. making it available for people to choose. Whether there's some pushback someplace about letting certain people choose that,
mm-hmm.
we're not experts in.
It's a different
in.
Choice.
It's,
yeah.
a, it's, a, it's, a different, mm-hmm. it's a different issue. I think there's, you know, when I listen to the news, I'm not an expert on this, but, mm-hmm. you know, I hear things that there may be some people that want to push women out of the workforce back into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And so, some women choose that, if they can choose that, that's great. But other women are not going to choose that, and it's not going to be good for them. And these things should be available.
Real quickly, since we're getting close on time here, if there is a small practical step, we've talked about kind of the macro issues here, states' involvement and all of that. But say you are a relatively early parent in the process, and you want to do something you know is going to have an impact with your child's development, what should you do, Ted?
Well, I'll say two things. One is make sure that you take advantage of a great early childhood program, that you take advantage of the help that's out there to find that program. Child Care Answers, search it online, is a wonderful resource, part of Day Nursery, to help provide that assistance to families to find child care. The second thing is to read, talk, sing, tell stories to your child every day.
And Tom, in about 10 seconds, can you give us something?
Take advantage of the time you have with your child, whether you're working or not, is the first thing you can do.
So face-to-face stuff.
Yeah.
Get close to. Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Ted Maple of the Day Nursery Association. Ted, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Thomas Locke of Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. Tom, thank you for spending some time with us, too.
Thanks for having me.
And for all of my listeners, I hope you will have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.